I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Governor Bob Ferguson musters crocodile tears when talking about his own safety, but when it comes to other people's safety, couldn't care less. Plus, a local high school plans to let a student return to class this year despite being caught at that same school with a loaded gun. And an illegal alien semi-driver who killed three in Florida got one of his licenses to drive from Washington State. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com, and click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, friends, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I've missed you. I hope you missed me and Nicole. We were gone for 2 days. One of those days was planned. We were at the Northwest Sanity Forum yesterday, which was just awesome, by the way. I mean, it had like Chris Rufo, Michael Schellenberger. I mean, Abigail Schreier was there. Folks from up and down the West Coast who just want a return to sanity and enough of the progressive extremism. So we were there yesterday taping a bunch of interviews for a special series that we have coming up, another edition of Truth Tellers, which is one of my favorite things that we do on Undivided. And then on Tuesday, as you know, in the morning, I sent out this flash poll because I was in a panic. Because I hate canceling shows. I hate canceling shows. You pay for them. I want to be here. But of course, we got news that Governor Bob Ferguson was going to be having a big old press conference right in the middle of our regular live show time down in Olympia to respond to the letter that he received from Attorney General Pam Bondi telling the state to shape up and get rid of its sanctuary policies. And I was really wrestling with, do I go to this? Because I really don't go in the field a lot anymore, as you guys know, more so sort of I'm getting old, sit here, do some commentary, go out in the field occasionally. But there's a specific reason that I ended up wanting to go. And I had asked you guys if it was okay, essentially, if we canceled the show so I could go down to this Bob Ferguson press conference. It's because on my drive in, I could think of nothing else except State Trooper Chris Gadd, who was killed by an illegal alien. And I was like, if I thought there were going to be reporters who were going to go to this press conference and ask Bob Ferguson about the dangerous elements of sanctuary policies, about the people who have been victimized because of our sanctuary policies, then I wouldn't have gone. But I called up my friend Jonathan Cho and I was like, hey, are you going down to this today? Because if Cho was going, I was going to not do it and come and do the show. And he said he couldn't go. So I was like, all right, I'm going down to Bob Ferguson's press conference. And I did get a chance to ask a question. I'll have that in a moment. But first, just to set up this story. So, of course, Pam Bondi sent a letter, not just to Washington State, but to every known sanctuary jurisdiction, saying you have until August 19th to tell the federal government how you plan to dismantle your sanctuary policies. So on August 19th, which was Tuesday, Bob Ferguson cobbled together this press conference, and they had it in the state reception room. And the mayor of Seattle was there and some state lawmakers and immigrant rights groups. There was like a billion people in there with him. And he handed out his response letter to Pam Bondi. And I got to say, I was sitting there reading it. So they gave a copy of it to us in the room before he actually came out and spoke. And I was like, gonna gag, because it was just so corny and so self-aggrandizing. I mean, talking about all his old wins against the Trump administration and how they'll never back down to the threats of the federal government. So he got up and spoke, and he, you know, a lot of his speech was basically verbatim from the letter. So here's a taste of that.
Let me be very clear. Washington State will not be bullied or intimidated by threats and legally baseless accusations. In the America that I love, have taught my children to revere, we resolve our differences peacefully through public discourse and, if necessary, through the courts, not by threatening political opponents with imprisonment. Pam Bondi takes a very different approach. Her letter threatens me, police officers, state troopers, sheriffs, judges, and other officials with prison time. Why? Because our state legislature passed a bipartisan law that appropriately and lawfully limits the diversion of state and local resources to federal immigration enforcement. By threatening criminal prosecutions of state officials, this letter embarrasses and disgraces the office of the United States Attorney General.
And then he obviously embarrassed and disgraced himself and the office of Washington governor even further, as if that office hasn't been embarrassed enough already after 12 years of Jay Inslee. And he refused to address, he didn't do it proactively. And so, of course, it's up to the media in the room, which is one of the reasons I wanted to go, is because I didn't have full faith that the journalists in the room would really press him on the criminal aspect of the sanctuary policies and on some of the atrocious crimes that people who are in our state getting sanctuary despite being in the country illegally have committed. The one that was on my mind and ultimately why I decided it was worth canceling the show on Tuesday to go down there is so I could make sure that someone would ask him about Washington State Patrol Trooper Christopher Gadd. I mean, we just went through trial for the illegal alien who killed Trooper Gadd. You know, we just, he was just sentenced. It just happened. And Governor Ferguson hasn't been pressed about this issue enough. I mean, there's so many instances of this, right? How you say the sanctuary policies are to shield just hardworking immigrants, right? Who just want to contribute to our community. And then he won't address this entire other segment of the problem and drug traffickers and child rapists. So I did, shock of the century, get a chance to ask Bob Ferguson a question and a follow-up when he didn't answer my question the first time.
So you've used this phrase repeatedly that we're not going to sacrifice our state's values. You know, we have several instances in this state. I see the chief of the patrol behind you. He just sat front row at sentencing while a man was sent to prison, an illegal alien, who murdered a Washington State Patrol trooper because of our state's sanctuary policies. He could have been deported multiple times, run-ins with law enforcement, but our sanctuary policies shielded him. He went on to kill Trooper Christopher Gadd. How is that in line with our state's values?
Our job is to make sure we're adopting laws that make the appropriate balance. And the Keep Washington Working Act, adopted in a bipartisan fashion, by the way, by the state legislature, I think strikes that right balance. If folks violate the law, engage in criminal conduct, they're going to be held accountable for that here in Washington State, and whether you're documented or undocumented. So I think those are consistent with the values of the Keep Washington Working Act, and we'll continue doing that.
A follow-up to the question I asked earlier, and you made the point, you know, if somebody breaks the law, it doesn't matter if they're here illegally or they're citizens, you know, we're going to arrest them, as was the case with the man who killed Trooper Gadd. But the point in the question was, you know, he had several run-ins with law enforcement in the years that he was living here illegally, where in a non-sanctuary state, they could have cooperated with ICE to remove him from the country. There's no doubt that Christopher Gadd would be alive today if it weren't for our state sanctuary policies. We also had the convicted child rapist who was just released from prison in Spokane out onto the streets, so ICE had to go track him down in the community rather than having an orderly and more safe transfer. So no one's saying, you know, let's go round up people in the fields or whatever it is, but why not cooperate with the federal government and with ICE when it comes to known violent criminals who we could remove from our streets in the interest of public safety?
Yeah, appreciate that. I think I've answered that question. Any other questions that folks have?
He hadn't answered the question, which is why I asked it again, because he didn't answer it the first time. And it's insane to me, and it probably wasn't audible, but when I was, you know, bringing up some of these instances, like the child rapist that they just released from a prison in Spokane, and then ICE had to go track him down, the crowd of progressives behind Bob was like, ugh, you know, audibly sighing at me daring to bring up real-life examples of illegal aliens who have done horrible things, and then the state of Washington makes more difficult the federal government's job in getting those people out of our state and out of our communities. And I'm sorry, but I was genuinely offended. No, I'm not sorry. I was, when I went down there, right, and I was like sitting front row, and I saw the chief of the patrol, John Batiste, walk in, my heart stopped. I grabbed my chest. I was stunned. He just sat for the sentencing of the illegal alien who killed one of his young, brand new Washington State Patrol troopers, the son of another state patrol trooper. And I'm sorry, but he has the audacity to show up at a press conference and stand behind the governor in support of the very policies that took that trooper's life? I was stunned. And I wanted to address actually my question to the chief of the patrol, but I knew that with Bob Ferguson, I was probably going to only get one bite of the apple. And so I certainly wanted to ask Bob that question. But I mean, this press conference was being protected by about a dozen state troopers, not only the governor's personal security detail, who are members of the patrol, but also out in the Capitol atrium. And I'm thinking, oh my God, what must they be thinking when they just lost one of their brothers in blue to an illegal alien, and they're here protecting the governor and the lawmakers who allowed it to happen and who are there actively avoiding any accountability for it. Absolutely stunned. And then after he ignores my question and says, I've already answered that, and you can't hear it, but I start to say when, and the mic's no longer in front of me, right? So after he ignores that question, then it gets even worse because he goes on this long, winded story to close the press conference about, and I guarantee he made all of this up, about his daughter asking him if he was going to be arrested by the Trump administration.
You know, I remember in 2017, so my years attorney general, Donald Trump, was the first president, and it was early that year, and we were, the AG's office, of course, was very involved in taking on the president, and I remember I picked up my daughter from school. She was probably 8 years old at the time, and we were walking home from school together, and she must have heard something at school that day that, like, her dad might get in trouble for, you know, challenging the president, right? She was eight, and that's, you can understand why a kid might think that, right, that, hey, can you do that, and might you get in trouble? And she asked me about that on the walk home. It was something like, hey, are you going to be in trouble for doing whatever it is you're doing? I remember saying to her, I said, Katie, look, we're lucky to live in a country, right?
Look at him
where your dad or any American, right, can speak out against the president. But that your dad can file lawsuits against the president, say things that are pretty direct about that president, be critical, stop him from doing something illegal, and I don't get in trouble, right? That we're lucky we live in a country like that, and not to take that for granted, because not every country is that way. That there are plenty of countries where if your dad did that, you'd be going to jail. I'd be going to jail, right? And, you know, the idea that now I need to have that conversation with my daughter, okay, and explain, well, you know, maybe I'm not so sure about that. You know, now we are a country, a U.S. Attorney General threatens her father and other state officials with exactly that, going to jail. For what? For what? So, look, I try to be careful with my words. You know, I really do, but we just really got to be honest with what's going on in our country right now. You know, we really do. And this is just taking things to an entirely another level.
Yeah, first, I'll take things that didn't happen for 500, Alex. Didn't happen. But second, here he is, and you can see him almost trying to force the tears out of his eyes about this conversation with his daughter about whether he would be get in trouble with the Trump administration. After he just so callously brushed off a legitimate question about someone else's child who was killed by an illegal alien. That shows you what kind of man Bob Ferguson is. Not even an ounce of, you know, the death of Trooper Gadd was a tragedy. Nothing. Brushes it off, and then he has crocodile tears about his own safety and what might happen to him if the Trump administration wants to throw him in prison. He is not a good person. And that whole time, and I will just say of the media and like why we had to cancel a whole show to go to this thing, there's like seven reporters in the room, and two, at least two, maybe three, but at least two of them didn't even ask a question. The whole press conference, you got the governor in front of you, the mayor of Seattle is there, state leaders are there, all of these opportunities, a big issue, didn't even ask. He'd asked multiple times, anyone else have a question? They didn't even ask a question. What are you even doing there? Why even show up? And then many of the other questions, you know, they weren't pressing him about sanctuary policies and about the downside of them. It's just the media has completely lost it. Lost it in favor of this anti-Trump narrative, and they don't care if people die or whatever it is. It's devastating. And it's not just Trooper Gadd. I mean, that was one example that's very recent. It's very sad. But so many of these other arrests that ICE is out embarking on, drug traffickers, the people who are slinging deadly fentanyl on our streets, they're going out there to do the job that Seattle and King County and the state of Washington won't do. They should be praised for it. And instead, they're vilified. They're called fascist by our Attorney General, Nick Brown. It's wild. I mean, the number of child rapists and people who distribute child pornography in our state who have been picked up by ICE is astonishing. This is common sense stuff. Let's have a nuanced conversation about it. Let's talk about what to do about people who've lived here for many years, have committed no new law violations, are gainfully employed, are paying taxes. Let's talk about that, but don't act as if there isn't this significant other part of illegal immigration. We're going to talk later in the show during Florida Report about the guy, the illegal alien, who was driving a semi-truck on the Florida Turnpike, whipped a U-turn, killed three people. And he had a CDL from the state of Washington he never should have been allowed to obtain. So it does have negative consequences. But the media and Democrats want to act like it doesn't. One other thing, and I'm just going to bring this up. I don't know the extent to which I can use the audio. So I'm standing there at the press conference, and I had wanted to at one point ask a question of Senator Lisa Wellman, a Democrat who was there. And, you know, Bob kind of ignored me. And as soon as the press conference is done, she comes right over to me. What I didn't realize at the time is that we're on a hot mic. So the whole thing, the whole conversation we had is recorded. I'm trying to figure out if it's legal. I think it is because it's a hot mic situation. I didn't intentionally like surreptitiously record her. But she comes over to me and says something to the effect of, I'm not going to quote it exactly because I won't remember, Brandi, he wasn't illegal. And I'm like, who, Senator? Who are you talking about? The guy who killed Trooper Gadd. And I go, I'm pretty sure he was illegal. That's kind of the whole, you know, thing we've been talking about. And she says, no, he came in on a visa. And so now I'm second guessing myself, like, wait, he came in on a visa? And she goes, and he came in on a visa, he just overstayed the visa. And I go, Senator, that makes him illegal. It was shocking, like this state senator, three terms in, seemed to have no idea that coming into the United States on a visa and never leaving made you illegal. And I just couldn't believe it. Like, she didn't have a basic understanding of how immigration laws work. You can't just come here on like a tourist visa, like that teacher from Brazil who was wanted for theft, or the Mexican national who was wanted for murder, and then just stay and you're not illegal. You're illegal. It was just a crazy conversation. So anyway, thank you for allowing us to go down there. I know we had to cancel the show, but and we hate being away from you guys, but I think it was worth it. Okay, we have an exclusive story on the show today. I imagine in the days to come, we're going to have a lot of follow-ups on this. Kids are going back to school in a matter of days. And I guess that's always kind of a stressful time, I think, for parents, or a fun time for students, but there's always concerns about a new school year and all these things going on. Now, imagine adding to that. Imagine you have a kid that's going back to high school this year. Maybe they're a sophomore last year, they're going to be a junior this year. And when they get back to school, also in the hallways, will be a student who the year before was caught with a loaded gun and multiple full magazines. Imagine how you'd feel as a parent, sending your kid back to school in the coming days with a classmate who brought a loaded gun to school and multiple fully loaded magazines and was caught and arrested and prosecuted for it. That's what's happening right now to parents in the Arlington School District, Arlington, Washington High School. As a reminder, this story was covered when it happened at the time. This is a headline from the Everett Herald in February of 2024. Arlington High School student arrested with gun on campus. City officials said they're working closely with school officials to conduct ongoing threat assessments. So it was a pretty kind of, I wouldn't say it was extensively covered at the time, but all the news outlets had some sort of headline on the fact that a kid brought a gun to Arlington High School. But the details of it are actually much more troubling than that. So when we pulled out the court documents, and I'm not going to say the name of this student, it's a minor, I don't think it adds anything to the story, and everyone who needs to know who the kid is in Arlington High School already knows who this kid is. So he gets charged by the Snohomish County Prosecuting Attorney's Office with a felony crime over this. I just want to note that first, because this is a serious offense. A juvenile in possession of a firearm. So here's the details from the police report that was filed at the time, because I think it's really important that you understand the gravity of what happened here. So I'm not going to read all of this, but basically the school resource officer was called into the principal's office, said that there was a report that one of the students, that several students had reported that Another student had told them he had a firearm in his backpack, and if the students went to the bathroom with him, he would show them. And so, of course, those students, thank God, went to school staff and said, hey, so-and-so said he's got a gun in his backpack. And so they pull the kid into the office, the police come, they bring in the kid's mom, and they proceed to search his backpack. And it says, so mom arrives, the police are there in front of the mother, in front of the principal, they start searching the backpack. They find a loaded 9mm Beretta pistol. It was loaded, it had a round in the chamber, it had a fully loaded magazine, so it had 10 rounds in the magazine. So the officer clears the gun, makes it safe. Then they keep digging through the backpack. They find some loose ammo in the backpack along with a second fully loaded magazine. So this isn't just a kid, a high schooler, who like found a gun, you know, unsecured in the home and brought it in and wanted to show it off to friends. He had a fully loaded gun, a bullet in the chamber, and extra rounds and an extra magazine in the backpack. Now, what comes to your mind? Obviously, for all the parents, they believed that a school shooting had been thwarted. And we've had schools, there's Marysville Pilchuck had a school shooting that was just horrible several years ago. And so that whole area, I mean, anybody is gonna take the threat of a school shooting seriously. Now, it's important to note that this student never said to anyone that he was gonna shoot up the school. He never admitted to police or told police or prosecutors that that was his intention. But that doesn't mean it wasn't. When you bring, and I think every parent who had a kid in that school, when that happened in February of 2024, that's immediately what would have come to mind for them. That, oh my God, thank God those kids went to the principal's office. Apparently this had been a problem student. So they went to the principal's office, and thank God before something could have happened, they found this gun. So the student's removed from school and he ends up getting charged with a felony, you know, goes to juvie and all of that stuff. And the parents think that's the end of it. Only to find out in the last couple weeks that when school begins this fall, that student gets to come back to school. Can you imagine being a parent in Arlington High School, especially one of the parents of the kids who told on him, got him, you know, caught with a gun, and now he's going to be walking the halls again? So one of these parents, her name is Emily Hutchinson, and she said, you can use my name. The school knows that I reached out to you. And she has kids at the school, and she's very, very concerned, and her husband have been in constant contact since finding this out with the superintendent. Here's an email the superintendent sent them. Dr. Chris Sweeting. Thank you for taking the time to meet with us last Friday. We appreciate your concerns and your commitment to ensuring the safety of your son and others. As we discussed, the district has completed a level one threat assessment and a safety plan for the student in question, and it will be implemented. So here's what they are telling parents who are concerned about this kid coming back to school. They said that he will be assigned a dedicated staff member to monitor him during the day. The student will be prohibited from carrying a backpack on campus, and they will conduct searches of the student for weapons. So that's their safety plan. And they told parents that essentially this student has been deemed rehabilitated. And what standards they're using to deem a student rehabilitated is beyond me, because we're not even talking about a long period of time here. This happened in February of 2024, and now he gets to come back and he's going to have an escort on campus? As parents have pointed out to us, what about extracurricular activities? You know, are they, if he wants to go to a football game or a track meet or a dance, they have so many unanswered questions about this. Going back to the email from the superintendent, he told the parents, since our meeting last Friday, I've spoken with district legal counsel and our school resource officer about your concerns. I've also scheduled a meeting with the family of the student in question before school starts. During our meeting, you mentioned having evidence suggesting that the student may be targeting students for retaliation. I encourage you to provide any evidence or additional information related to those concerns. Having all information will allow the district to review the situation fully and determine whether additional protective measures or steps are necessary. Not like to determine whether maybe we shouldn't allow the student back in class, but maybe we need to take additional protective measures. He says, our first priority is the safety of all students. I don't know how you can say your first priority is the safety of all students when you're allowing this kid to come back to class. He said, we remain committed to taking all lawful and appropriate actions to achieve that goal. So again, I've been in touch with this particular parent, Emily Hutchinson. Here's what she told me. She said, when they found out all of this was going on, we met with the officer that took the initial report and Mr. Axelson, the assistant principal. He proceeded to tell me in an aggressive way that he didn't believe the student had intent to shoot other students. They assured us they would do everything to protect our kids and the rest of the students and staff and would not let him return in person. So previously they'd been told, of obviously she's a concerned parent, she's freaked out. They went to the school, they went to the officer, and they told her at the time, oh, don't worry, you know, he didn't intend to shoot other students. Like, how can you be sure? How can you actually be sure? Because a big sign that you have an intent to shoot someone is you bring a loaded gun, right? And she's given this assurance that he's not going to be able to come back to school in person, only to find out he's coming back to school in person. She went on to say, it's ridiculous that we even have to go fight for our kids to feel safe. We are prepared to take this further if they are adamant that this kid deserves rights over our kids. The parents and staff do not want this boy returning. So she said that she's talked to other parents and staff members who also don't want this kid back at school. You know, can you guarantee that they're going to be able to monitor his movements every second of the day when you say you're going to be conducting searches because you're not allowing him to have a backpack? So are you saying it's going to be a full-on pat-down every single day? We reached out with multiple questions to the school district this morning. So among the questions I've asked, have all parents been notified about this? And if so, when? So how long have they had to kind of prepare and make a decision about their own child's safety? So that was one of the questions. I asked, why not send them to an alternative school? Those exist. They're there for a reason, for problem students. Or at least send them into a different district where maybe you don't have the same kids who, you know, told on him the first time or who he might have a vendetta against who he doesn't know. I also asked, how can the district claim to prioritize student safety when a student with this serious of an offense is allowed back in school? And doesn't it expose the district and taxpayers to quite a bit of liability? I mean, what happens if this kid comes back to school under these circumstances and hurts somebody? Like, that district is going to be sued to high heaven, as they should be. And then, of course, I also asked what options are available for families, parents, and students who don't feel safe sending their kids back. You've got a bunch of students who did nothing wrong, and now the onus is kind of on them to decide whether they can go back to class and feel safe. And I got a very brief response back from the district, from the director of communications, Gary Sabol. He said, the district can't provide information about individual students due to the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act. The district's highest priority is the safety and well-being of all students. We continue to take all appropriate measures within the bounds of applicable law to ensure a safe learning environment for every student. But you're not providing a safe learning environment for every student. The kid brought a loaded gun with a round in the chamber and extra bullets to school with him. And despite all of, I mean, you were able to come up with a strategy during the pandemic. You had kids learning from home during the pandemic for a long time. You're telling me in this case, you can't have him learn from home? Would that be too detrimental? Because you didn't think it was detrimental during the pandemic. There's a million options at your disposal. I'm sorry. I tend to believe, and I did ask you guys this in our daily subscriber show poll, which I'll get to later. You know, if you think there should be a second chance for a high schooler. Now, if you're talking about some young kid who like packs a gun to school, and you might be looking at a different situation. You're talking about a high schooler, almost an adult, who brings a gun to school, extra bullets, is allegedly bragging about it to students, etc. Should that be a one and done? Where, hey, you can't come back to the same school. You really freaked people out the first time, and now you're a convicted felon. So it seems like there's a lot of options here, but imagine gearing up, like this mom, Emily, to send her son back to school, and he's freaked out, and what he's thinking about is not excitement on another school year, I get to see my friends and all this. Now he's freaked out that this kid, who he believes was going to shoot up the school, gets to come back. It's unreal. I think things like this happening maybe in Seattle, but in Arlington? Oh my God, get a grip. Send the kid to a different school. Send him to an alternative school. Have him learn online. You love online learning. You did it for a long time during the pandemic. There are a million options. So we're going to be doing a lot of follow-up on this, trying to figure out exactly the extent to which parents have been notified, because we know schools have been very bad at that. You know, they tend to not notify parents until someone kind of finds out, and then they try to cover their tracks. So we want to get a little bit more information on that. We want to hear from other Arlington parents and how you feel about this. If there's any parents who are fine with it, who are sending a child to Arlington High School, please let me know about that too. I'd love to hear your opinion on it and your position. But from where I stand, it's not worth giving this one student a second chance to be back in an environment when he did something so dangerous just a short time ago. And to say he's rehabilitated, I don't know how you're gauging his level of rehabilitation. It's very concerning to me. So we'll likely have more on this on Monday. But since school is starting very soon, we want to start to get this story out there. And I don't know if community members want to push back. Now is the time to do it before it's too late. All right, coming up next, Washington State sucks for business. We have a couple examples of that. First, I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Why? You could save a bunch of money. Here I am, state's trying to cost you money. I'm trying to save you money by giving you great advice to take the First Mark Challenge. I'm a member of the First Mark family. Undivided's insured through First Mark. Nicole's a member of the First Mark family, as are so many Undivided viewers and listeners, because they offer a great service. This is what the First Mark Challenge entails. You talk to them about your current insurance. Let them review kind of what you have going on right now. Talk to them about any changes you have coming up in your life. And then they'll go out, they'll shop the market, the available carriers for you. They'll come back with their recommendations. And for a lot of Undivided viewers and listeners, First Mark has come back and said, good news, we can get you better insurance at a better price. So that's a no-brainer. And you never pay First Mark anything for their services. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right, I want to tease what's coming up this week on Sundays with Subscribers. So we've got a dually going on. We've been talking a lot about the pressures that Washington business owners are under, not least of which the $9.5 billion in additional taxes, much of that against businesses of all sizes that was passed in Olympia this last legislative session. But then there's all these things going on top of that. So this enrages me to no end. I'll tell you, few stories have enraged me quite like this. We find out last week that a restaurant that had pretty publicly refused to stop indoor dining during the pandemic had been ever since then fighting nearly $1 million in fines from the state of Washington. This was a story we talked about last week from the Chronicle. Appeals court upholds $1 million in fines against Washington restaurant for violating COVID restrictions. The restaurant is Stuffy's 2 in Longview. And they decided it was late 2020, so December of 2020, and then into 2021. So this is like nearly a year into the pandemic at this point, that they just could not survive. Could not survive if they didn't open back up for indoor dining. The takeouts were not doing it for them. They were going to lose their business. They have 35 employees to worry about. So they just said, you know what? We have to do it. So they restarted indoor dining. And as a result, the state started to fine them $18,000 a day. $18,000 a day. And let me just say about this restaurant, it's like a community favorite already, but Longview is an area of the state that has a lot of economic challenges. And so you have these people, like if the restaurant shuts down, I guess, could they find work somewhere else? Maybe, but there's not a lot of employment opportunities out there. And so this was the decision they made for their business, and the state went after them to the tune of $18,000 a day. They've been trying to fight it ever since. And now they lose in a court of appeals, and all of that with the interest and compounded adds up to nearly $1 million. So on Sundays with Subscribers this week, we're going to be talking about one of the owners of Stuffy's 2. Her grandparents had started it, and she's sort of taken over the business, and she was running the business during this period of time. Her name is Sky Hoag, and she just said that really, you know, in hindsight, she still would have had to do this for her business because otherwise her business would have gone under. So when you look back, I mean, gosh, now we're talking like 3-4 years. And if at the end of the day you have to write a check somehow for $1 million, would you go back and just do things differently?
No. I can't imagine living with myself now, knowing how many families would have struggled if we would have shut the doors. Not just us alone. I mean, we had loans out on everything to just try and survive. But people don't really understand the cost that it goes into running a restaurant of that size. It's like, I mean, $20,000 a week in bills alone. That's with our payroll, that's with everything. We have to have, we have to have money coming in, and the to-go orders was just not cutting it. I can't imagine what I would feel like knowing that 35 people struggled for that long, for as long as it went on after that. That would have been, I couldn't have lived with myself for sure.
Yeah,
So.
just nuts. I mean, how infuriating is that? The state is pissing away millions of dollars on all sorts of nonsense. I mean, I'll use the example again. Gender surgeries for trans inmates, laser hair removal, specialized doctors for trans prison inmates. They waste $1 million is nothing to the state. They waste that on a daily basis. And they have spent 4 years now going after a single restaurant for something that they had to do to survive during the pandemic. Like, can we just move on? So they're going to try to take it to the next level, appeal it again, but your heart just breaks for them. And they just had a fire, so they're trying to rebuild from the fire they just had at the restaurant. It's unreal. So we're going to talk about that coming up on Sundays with Subscribers. We're also going to have on is it the son of the Reptile Man? Because I don't know if he calls
Yes.
himself the Reptile Man,
Right. I think a
but
lot of people call him the Reptile Man
yes, the owner of the Reptile
because.
Zoo in Monroe, which, as you know and probably heard on the news, is going to close down in large part because they went through their savings during the pandemic, trying to survive. And now all the new business policies in the state of Washington have made it nearly impossible for them to be able to turn a profit. So Isaac, who runs the Reptile Zoo, is also going to join us. All of that coming up on Sundays with Subscribers. So a really great time to become a subscriber if you haven't already. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, and just click on the banner that says support the show. All right, all these things going on. What is the state of Washington focused on? Well, creating a rainbow resource hub. Yes, we'll take you through the latest offering from the state's LGBTQ commission in our segment Unbelievable. First, don't forget, before they're sold out, to sign up for the Engage Conference happening October 22nd and 23rd at Meydenbauer Center in Bellevue. I will be there along with my friend Jonathan Cho. We're going to be talking about how the media covers housing policy, everything from rent control to housing first and homelessness. So it'll be a lot of fun. We did it last year as well, and it was just a blast. While you are at rhawa.org to sign up for the conference, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord, also consider becoming a member of RHA. They can help you navigate the state's complex policies around housing. Rhawa.org, rhawa.org. I think a yearly membership is like $260, so definitely worth it if you're a landlord trying to navigate everything, including rent control. All right, good news, good news. Good news, the state of Washington really given the people what they want in the form of a rainbow resource hub. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. And this is the stuff I'm talking about. So we just covered how the state is going after for 4 years a small business for $1 million in fines because of the indoor dining during the pandemic. And they want this money back. They want this money for some reason, but then they spend money on stuff like this. So we have something called the LGBTQ Commission, which is already dumb. Why do we have a state commission for people based on who they want to have sex with? This is the kind of stuff that can be done by the private sector. There's a million groups that are supportive of the LGBTQ community that could help the LGBTQ community access services or whatever they need. It doesn't have to be run by the government. So we shouldn't even have the commission. But now the commission has unveiled a brand new website that is called the Rainbow Resource Hub. And as it suggests, it will be a hub of information and services for all things rainbow. Nicole hates that the rainbow stands for gay stuff, because she loves the rainbow, and it's been stolen from her. The joy of the rainbow has been stolen from her.
I wish it could just be Hawaii's rainbow. Why does that have to be gay rainbow.
It is LGBTQ plus 2IA questioning has the rainbow, and we're never getting it back. So I think part of this has to do with their continued, oh, the Trump administration hates gay and trans people, and we need to help them in any way we can. So let's see what kind of stuff you can find in the Rainbow Hub, shall we? Changing your identification documents. So if you want to say you're a, and in our state you can, you could change your birth certificate. And then if you change your birth certificate, you're able then to change your gender on your passport, even though the Trump administration has prohibited it. Because how would they, if you present them with a birth certificate that says you're a man, even if you were born a woman, how would they know otherwise? Unless, you know, they call you on it and say, are you sure? So they're basically, this is a whole website with how to thwart the Trump administration's efforts to basically get this radical ideology out of government. So then they get into housing discrimination and homelessness. Yeah, I'm just like, okay, you can't solve homelessness. You can't help anyone who's homeless. How are you going to specifically help 2SLGBTQIA plus people with homelessness? Keep them in homelessness? Yeah, probably. Employment discrimination and unemployment. Gay people are not being discriminated against in Washington state in employment. If anything, they're being given preferential treatment. And yes, I said it, and yes, I mean it. And then, of course, gender-affirming care for youth and adults is protected in Washington state. Let's see, HIV, AIDS, and then inclusion in sports. So, of course, you know, because they want boys to be able to compete against girls. Then they get into LGBTQ-owned businesses, which, as we talked about last week, the state is now giving preferential treatment for awarding state contracts to business owners based on who the owner of that business prefers to sleep with, men or women. So it has a bunch of things available on there. But the gender-affirming care, I think, is the part that is the most disturbing to me. And it, you know, I know that Washington State still does it. I know Washington State is still fighting to do it. But they continue to lie to kids about the risk. And they're really trying to give here children a quick option to find information on how to mutilate themselves. That's what the state is doing. This is like a website for kids to find out how they can go mutilate themselves without their parents. So they're talking about only the good parts of gender affirming care, which of course we shouldn't even call it that. It's child mutilation, that it's life-saving, gives you information on where you can get the facts. Yeah, I'm sure that they're gonna give kids the facts of it. And then they have something on here about how bans on gender mutilation disrupt mental health. And they have a segment on kids knowing their rights. They say gender-affirming care is life-saving health care. You have a right to access gender-affirming care in Washington state. It's just insane. They want kids to mutilate themselves, and they want to make it as easy as possible for children to mutilate themselves. And they have a link in there you probably saw to Washington State Attorney General, Know Your Rights for gender-affirming care. And what do you think they link to? They link to the Attorney General's website, and they remind kids that they can run away from home to get this care. Remember Senate Bill 5599 that says that a licensed youth shelter in Washington state are barred from contacting the parents or guardians of youth staying at the shelter when the youth is seeking gender-affirming care. Isn't it funny? Because when they were debating this, they said, oh, it's not about that. It's not about making it easier for kids to get this care. It's just about making sure they don't wind up on the streets. No, this is about giving them a fast track pipeline to be mutilated by doctors without the consent of their parents. Because what happens is that they go to these youth facilities. They say, I want gender care and my parents won't let me. Even if they have no proof of that. Even if the child has like never talked to their parents about it, they just don't think their parents will understand. They run away from the shelter, no evidence of abuse, or they run away from home to the shelter, no evidence of abuse has to be presented whatsoever. The shelter will not tell parents where you are. So as you know, there's only two reasons under Washington state law right now where a child can run away from home and the state won't tell you where they are. Physical abuse, or they don't think you'll agree with their gender identity. So they've basically equated those two things under law. Physical abuse is just as bad as not conforming to your child's desired gender, no matter what it is. And so the state has this new rainbow hub where it's mostly about the rights of kids to access life-altering surgeries, and then reminds kids at every available opportunity that they can do this without parental consent. Because as I was saying, you go to the shelter, All you have to find is one doctor who will call you a mature minor, because we have the mature minor doctrine in Washington State. If you can find one doctor, which in our state probably isn't hard, because I imagine that a doctor willing to perform these surgeries on kids is a doctor who would be willing to deem you a mature minor to get those surgeries, and that means that you don't have to have parental consent. You can do anything without parental consent if you can find one doctor to label you a mature minor. It's disgusting. It's disgusting. And this is what our resources are being used for. A rainbow hub to help do a pipeline for kids to get their breasts and genitals cut off. And meanwhile, the state for 4 years is relentlessly pursuing a small restaurant for doing indoor dining during the pandemic and wants to find them $1 million. It is nuts. How we all still live here is really beyond me. It's quite unbelievable. And there's a public meeting, I should note, in case you want to weigh in on this. The Washington State LGBTQ Commission is having a public sitting meeting in the Tri-Cities. Oh, we ought to get some. Come on. In the Tri-Cities, there ought to be some people who can go. Now, obviously, be respectful. But you can go or you can Zoom in. It's happening tomorrow at 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Jeez, they're having a whole day. At the Richland, Washington Public Library. Doris Roberts Gallery of the Richland Public Library on Northgate Drive.
Public comments only at 4:30.
Oh, so. My God. Mm-hmm. So they're having a 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. meeting, and public comment is from 4:30 to 5. Yeah. Oh, my God. These people are outrageous.
But it's one of those things. Be aware when your kids come home with, you know, all these flyers. Keep an eye out for the Rainbow Hub.
You know what I never found out? Did anyone go to that Olympian ice cream social?
We didn't hear from
anybody. Nobody told me they went to the Olympian ice cream social. Maybe the Olympian canceled it because we encourage people to go. But anyway, so there you go. Tomorrow you can go 4:30 to 5 p.m. Public testimony at the meeting of the Washington State LGBTQ Commission and say, stop transing our kids. It's weird, weirdos. All right, coming up next, we have to talk about this. This is a major story. There was, of course, the tragic crash on a Florida turnpike that involved an illegal alien driver, killed three innocent people. Turns out he never should have been behind the wheel of that semi-truck in the first place. So we got a tie to Washington State in the story and a tie to Florida. So we're going to talk about it in our segment, Florida Report. First, our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital is the guy to go to if you want a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. Zach and his team can talk to you about a whole bunch of things. So we've got the trade deals, obviously, affecting global markets, uncertainty around AI, which is huge, new digital coins seemingly every day. So if you're concerned with just trying to track all of that, the impact on your retirement portfolio, but also about how much risk your retirement portfolio is exposed to, you know, it might be time to get back to basics and sort of do a reset with Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital. Bulwark always focuses on risk management, especially in this chaotic world we're living in. The core of that strategy involves basic fundamentals of value investing. Bulwark continues to look for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. Bulwark's Zach Abraham reviews market changes with his daily Know Your Risk podcast and YouTube channel. You can find it wherever you hear podcasts, and all of his social media platforms are at Know Your Risk Podcast. So make sure you follow him and reach out to him for a second opinion. Get back to basics. Get a second opinion with Bulwark's Know Your Risk portfolio review. It's free. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. So what's fascinating about this is this news comes out right when I'm sitting in front of Bob Ferguson at his press conference about, you know, we're going to defend our sanctuary policies. So I'm sitting there and I get a couple messages about it. Just to FYI, this happened. The Secretary of the Department of Transportation, Sean Duffy, was giving new information about a crash that happened on the Florida Turnpike, where a semi-driver did an unauthorized U-turn, cars crashed into it, three people were dead. Well, it turns out, according to Sean Duffy, three states, none of them Florida, are to blame for this. So the illegal alien driver, who was working for White Hawk Carrier, according to Sean Duffy, was improperly issued a full-term CDL by the state of Washington. He says asylum seekers and illegal aliens are not allowed to receive this. Furthermore, California also issued him a CDL. And New Mexico failed to conduct an English language proficiency test when they pulled this driver over for speeding. He says had they done this, the driver would not have been on the road. He said states must follow the rules. If they had, this driver would never have been behind the wheel and three precious lives would still be with us. The failures here are despicable. Non-enforcement and radical immigration policies have turned the trucking industry into a lawless frontier, resulting in unqualified foreign drivers improperly acquiring licenses to operate 40-ton vehicles. So we were already into the Ferguson press conference on sanctuary policies as this was happening. And so I wasn't able to get a question. I asked for a one-on-one with Governor Ferguson afterwards. He couldn't accommodate it. Not maybe a particular surprise. But of course, the state of Washington has exposed itself to a lot of liability here. I imagine they'll be sued over this by the family members of the people who were killed. But there's also questions about how could this even happen? If he wasn't supposed to legally be able to get this CDL from the state of Washington or California, how did he get it? Governor Ron DeSantis in Florida, as you can imagine, is livid over all of this. I talked to my sister about it on our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
This is just devastating. And watching the video, I mean, so are you familiar with where this is on the Florida Turnpike? And I just can't imagine, like, in a big rig like that, thinking it was okay as people are driving at freeway speeds to just whip a U-turn. It's insane.
Yeah, this was just north of Palm Beach. So I'd say maybe about 2 hours north of where I am. So not that far, considering how big Florida is. And you're right. It's just, it's kind of one of those things that I feel like should be common knowledge. But when you have somebody in this case that doesn't understand basic English or even road signs, I don't know. It doesn't make up for even the lack of empathy you see in that video where he like has almost no reaction.
Almost no reaction. I couldn't believe it. It's sort of like, oh, well. And you know, I was a little iffy when President Trump came out and said, hey, we need all these big rig drivers to speak English. And I'm like, is that necessary? And I was hearing from people in the trucking industry like, yes, it's necessary. They're driving this massive machine down the road at freeway speeds and they can't even, some of them, read signs on the road, you know, about things like this, like, no, you know, and I mean, some signs are basic and they're just pictures that everyone can understand, but just devastating. So Ron DeSantis came out, Governor DeSantis had a press conference about this. We just talked about the tie here to Washington State, and I wanted to play more of it. I won't play a ton, but I wanted to play the clip where he specifically calls out Washington and California.
How ridiculous is it that somebody would get a commercial driver's license who doesn't understand the language of this country, doesn't understand road signs, doesn't understand these things. And the feds, when they had him detained a couple days ago, they did an English test and he failed abysmally, not even close. Like not only like, you know, a little English, like no, he was terrible. And yet he's getting these commercial licenses from these sanctuary states. And you know, in the U.S., we all kind of have our opportunities to run our states the way we want. We've chosen to be the free state of Florida. And I think most people here appreciate that. California, Washington State, they're choosing much different pathways. And I think it's been very destructive to the people there. That's why people have fled those states. But, you know, their policies and their recklessness spills over to other states in this country. And it spilled over in this case to the state of Florida. So the three Floridians are dead, you know, in part because of the recklessness that we see out on the left coast.
And I think that's a fair point. You know, you can, as he said, you can run the state how you want to run your states. But when there is a direct impact, now we have Floridians dead because of, in part, sanctuary policies in Washington and California.
Yeah, all the way across. That means that this guy drove through countless states that probably multiple states that wouldn't recognize his license as valid, just like Florida doesn't, all the way to get here and commit this crime. And like, I call it a crime because you did something that's completely illegal. Like you made an illegal U-turn.
It is a crime, yes. Not a question. You know,
yeah, and I can't believe that he wasn't arrested on the spot and he was able to fly back to California. I don't think these governors of these states like yours in California realize that, like, you're trying to offer these people freedoms that other states have reasons, very good reasons, not to allow people in their states to have those freedoms.
Right.
And it does leak over. I mean, this is a really good example, a horrible example of that. And, you know, once he gets back here, I mean, DeSantis, like you said, he's going to throw the book at him. But it's not going to change anything. You know, if you want to give illegal immigrants certain rights in your state. So those rights shouldn't be able to extend outside of your state lines.
100%.
Drive, have a commercial license, and you want people to be able to, you know, have jobs and operate their commercial vehicles, operate them within the state. But the fact that he was allowed, and the company he worked for also should be facing some heavy scrutiny too, because allowing this guy to not only be able to pass basic literacy tests for like English literacy and not even recognize certain road signs, like I can't believe he even got his commercial license in the first place, let alone is allowed to drive it wherever he wants in the United States.
Yeah, and there's still a lot of questions about, well, how did he get it? Because technically he wasn't supposed to be able to get it in Washington state either. He got a, so there's actually really a couple states that are at fault here. So California's issuance of the driver's CDL, Washington state issued him a full term CDL. New Mexico failed to conduct an English language proficiency test when he pulled him over, when he was pulled over in New Mexico for speeding. They said had they done this, the driver never would have been on the roads. There's multiple states that failed here. And so we don't know, you know, did he get these CDLs by kind of surreptitious means? Like, did somebody lie somewhere along the way? But it exposes our state now to great, the taxpayers of our state to great risk. I mean, if I'm the family of the people who died, I'm suing the state of California, I'm suing the state of Washington, I'm suing the state of New Mexico, I'm suing the carrier that employed him. So, you know, it's just unreal that it happened. And at the same time that this news came out from Secretary Duffy, our governor was standing up with the who's who of leaders in our states talking about how we're going to fight back against any efforts from the federal government to undo our sanctuary policies, as the news is coming out that something we did here led to three deaths in Florida. So sad stuff. All right, Miranda, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Well, their freedoms are going to be respected unless somebody comes in from one of our stupid states and hurts them, and Florida couldn't do anything about it. It's unreal. So the state of Washington has a lot of questions to answer. I did, as this news came out after the Ferguson press conference, ask his communications director if they were aware of the statement that Secretary Duffy had just put out at the time. And she said, vaguely, it just happened. We're looking into it. So we'll have some questions, of course, for how this was allowed to happen. Where was sort of the fraud or failure at in the system? Or is this happening a lot? Have a lot of people been able to do this? And is it the state's fault? All right, we'll get to our daily subscriber show poll next, except I had to talk about this because what the hell? Are we going to disagree again? This is so stupid. Every once in a while, I got to call out the right just to make sure that, you know, I'm keeping a check on my own bias. The Associated Press had this article about something happening in Oklahoma around education. The headline, Oklahoma Ideology Test for Teachers from New York and California draws criticism. So basically, Oklahoma is going to do an ideology test on you if you're a teacher from California or New York and you want to be a teacher there.
Hey,
it says, OK, before you make an excuse for this travesty, Oklahoma will require applicants for teacher jobs coming from California and New York to pass an exam that the Republican dominated state's top education official says is designed to safeguard against radical leftist ideology, but which opponents decry as a MAGA loyalty test. Ryan Walters, Oklahoma's public school superintendent, said any teacher coming from the two blue states will be required to pass an assessment exam registered and administered by PragerU, an Oklahoma-based conservative nonprofit, before they can get a state certification. He said, as long as I'm superintendent, Oklahoma classrooms will be safeguarded from the radical leftist ideology fostered in places like California and New York. And of course, Randy Weingarten hates it, which is probably, you're right, probably an indication that it's a good thing. First of all, why not include Washington State as well? If you're going to do it, you should probably add teachers who are coming from Washington State and Oregon to the list. Although I would also say, first of all, you can't do this. Our whole thing is about we need to suck the sort of political bias. I mean, they're always going to have political bias as teachers, but I also don't want a Republican teacher pushing their political bias or talking about, yay, Trump is awesome around kids. That's not the point. They're there to get an education. We don't want kids to be force-fed their teacher's ideology. And so it shouldn't matter. It shouldn't matter. And look, I need to see the test, okay?
I was going to say, because that's not really the problem that right. We're having. We don't have far-right people. people trying to teach kids far right agendas.
Well, there might be in red states. I just don't know. We cover Washington.
It's not the problem. Stop.
I love your face right there. You weren't on camera. It's She's like rolling her eyes. Yes.
The problem is the lefty teachers trying to in like the radical gender stuff and all of this. That's the problem. And so I'm okay with it on both sides. So make sure the test covers both radical left and radical right. That's fine. But hey, if you're, I'm fine making sure teachers are making sure that we're just teaching the basics.
Yeah. Well, as long as the test is focusing on understanding the line as a teacher.
Yes.
Because every teacher has a political ideology.
Yes.
It might be stronger or more extreme, but as long as it's about, can you recognize where the line is in your classroom when you've crossed it?
Yep.
And so if that's what the test is, which it might be, I'm okay with that. It could be administered by anyone. Mm-hmm. It's more of some guidance and rules for teachers. But shouldn't all teachers already be getting that? Like, hey, we don't talk about your personal politics in class. We don't push radical agendas in class or whatever it is, but they do it anyway. So it's about holding bad teachers accountable. Because whenever I look at something like this, I always try to flip it around. And if you had Washington State that came out and Chris Reichdahl that came out and said, we're going to administer a test to red state Florida teachers who want to come here, which would never happen, by the way. No one wants to come here from Florida.
Well,
who would come here and make sure that they're not spreading
real good
their radical mega ideology. We would lose our minds about it.
Yeah.
We would lose our minds about it. And so I want to see the test. But if you wouldn't like the other side does it, you can't like this, right? I'm very curious what you guys have to say
teachers
about it.
Teachers might come here because we pay the best. So teachers might come here,
and they don't even have to prove that they're good teachers. Their students can all fail and they still get good pay.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They can just come hang out in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And but I do think I think it's a way of get bypassing because so like you say, teachers should already know, but they're being taught in colleges that this is what you do. You try to indoctrinate.
Well, they think that they're
part
doing
of the gig now.
The problem is, yes, they think they are educating students.
Yes.
They think talking about how, you know, Israel and stolen land and all this stuff.
It's part
of
the gig. Yeah,
they think this is educating kids for the future. Mm-hmm. So if the test can weed that out from whatever ideology it might be, then fine. So, okay. I'm initially triggered about it. I want to see the test, and I do think it should be a test that represents the inability of any teacher, regardless of politics, to keep it out of the classroom, because that's what we need.
Could we also get that for media members?
Yes. Are you able to keep your bias out of your reporting?
And, like, this is what you do as a media member. You go ask questions.
But that's the thing is, just like teachers.
Hold accountable, have, yeah.
They know they're supposed to. They just don't do it. So what is a test going to... They could lie on the test and then just go do it. They know they're supposed to do those
things. Most do. The ones that have been there a while do. I don't know about the new generation of media because I don't... Yeah, I don't know. Because, like, I admit, they're not paid well. So the new generation of media, they're just hiring anybody. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be a meteorologist to be a meteorologist. You don't have to... You don't have to be an expert at anything anymore to be considered an expert at something.
Well, and it's kind of what the media is. Like, they're fake experts on things. Yeah. And that's why, like, the war in Ukraine, all of a sudden everyone on the media is an overnight expert in what's happening in Ukraine. And it is your job to sort of get up to date quickly on what's going on, but sometimes they just fake it too much. Anyway, should we get to our daily subscriber show poll?
Okay.
Let's do it. I had to get your guys' opinion. Am I overreacting about this? I don't think so, but I asked, if a high school student brings a loaded gun to school, should the student be allowed to return to that same school? Yes or no? And I specified high school because I do think it's a little different when you get into like an elementary school kid. So now like, an elementary school kid doesn't, you know what I mean? So that's why I specified high school. I wasn't sure what the results are going to be. It's actually very lopsided. Nicole, what do you say? Yes or no?
No, it's an expelled. You're expelled. You can never come back. See you later.
It seems very obvious.
It seems very obvious to me. You can never come back. That's especially high school because, I don't think it should haunt you for the rest of your life because you are still, adolescent.
Yeah.
But you know the actions have consequences in high school. I mean, you're not 6 years old and still learning. Like, you're not living with a bad influence, and you know your older brother is car thief and said, hold this gun for me. You know, these are teenagers that know what they're doing,
right?
And
they need to face consequences.
They need to face those consequences so they don't make bigger mistakes as adults that they have longer consequences for, like a lifetime in jail or 20, 30, 40 years in jail.
Yeah, he's lucky this happened as a juvenile and they charged him as a juvenile. And so it's going to be off his record in a couple years. He hardly had to do any time, like, you know, he didn't have to do any time in an adult facility. Mm-hmm. So he really got off pretty easy. Most people, 90% of our subscribers saying, no, he should not be allowed back to school in this situation. Bob said, bringing a loaded gun to school in today's world would suggest a mental health issue that would need to be addressed before the child was allowed back in school. Shine the Light says, the age of the child matters since they're immature, stupid, and vulnerable to suggestion by friends or others. We don't know the context. Did this person threaten anyone? Context matters. And I think we gave quite a bit of context in the opening segment of the show, but obviously it wasn't included with the poll. So maybe you have some more context now to make your decision. But, you know, he didn't outright threaten anyone. The school says he hadn't planned to shoot up the school. But do you know that for sure? How can you be sure just because he said so? Leland says, context is very important to me. I brought a gun to school every day in my vehicle and it never harmed anyone. We even brought it to home ec class one day so I could teach other students how to take down a Colt car 15. The 90s were great. Yes, 90s, very different.
Well, and 90s? So, you were bringing guns to school in the 90s? I'm surprised. Like, I know the 90s. 70s, but...
Yeah, some people said, well, if it's like a hunting rifle on a rack locked up in your car or something. So obviously context matters. But I think the context of this situation is fairly clear. Jay Lang says, no, unless there's a reasonable explanation, although I'm struggling to come up with one. And here's one of the things that I think gets me about this. What happens every time there's a school shooting? They understandably, you know, lose their minds and then they come after Second Amendment rights. And they ban guns. And I mean, that's how we ended up with the semi-automatic assault weapon ban in Washington State. Is there was a couple things, but then they limited the purchase of certain firearms to the age of 21 before they did that. And that was the result of a party shooting that happened with teenagers. So they take these dramatic steps to limit our Second Amendment rights because it's like, oh my God, this can never happen again, right? We can never, and they use school shootings as an example. Don't you want to prevent school shootings? Then why do you need these weapons of war? And so they take away your Second Amendment rights. But then when a kid actually brings a loaded gun to class with multiple fully loaded magazines, you say, no big deal. He can come back to class. Can we get our guns back then? Can we buy semi-automatic rifles again then? Because clearly you don't think it's that big of a deal. Clearly you don't think guns are that scary if the kid who brought a loaded gun to school gets to go back. That's the thing that really irks me about it. No consistency. No consistency. B. Larson says, Brandy, I said no, but it kind of depends. In my high school, you could go out into the parking lot any day of the week and probably find 50 or more loaded rifles in the rifle racks and pickups. I don't remember anyone ever threatening anyone else with harm. It's not why they were there. So be careful when rulemaking. Yeah, I mean, I think you do, and these schools do have to look at every individual circumstance. That's why I'm saying if you're, you know, a grade schooler, like a sixth grader, and you bring a pistol, do I think you should never be allowed back to class and have to figure out something else all the way until you graduate high school? No, but this situation, I understand why parents are so deeply concerned. And now they have to decide, do I have to upend my child's education because of what this kid did? That does not seem fair to me.
I'm also surprised that this kid even and his parents even want him to go back to that school. It seems really awkward. Awkward, number one, but also the stipulations that they've given him are pretty terrible. It does not sound fun.
Like, imagine being escorted around school in high school because you brought a gun to school.
You have a babysitter every day at high school.
Yeah,
that sounds terrible. So why wouldn't you go to an alternative school, or why wouldn't you be homeschooled, or why wouldn't you do an online school, or maybe half and half? Or, you know, I know in Snohomish County they have a couple different alternative schools where you can go to, you know, do you know, trade school.
I don't know.
Like it's a half day trade school, Snow Isle, I think they call it. So you can do like class online and then you go and do it, work on, you know, diesel mechanic or whatever it is. And so I like, why wouldn't you
there
do something
options.
Like that? There's so many things that you could do that would be better than going to school every day with a babysitter.
And then getting a pat down. And it's not clear not if the pat down is going to be every day, but are they going to do an actual legitimate pat down on him every day to make sure he doesn't have a gun? Does the school resource officer have to do that every single day? It's so strange. So we'll definitely have a follow-up to this on Monday as we try to get to the bottom of it, hopefully hear from more parents in Arlington. But just wild. What a crappy circumstance under which to send your kids back to school to be dealing with this.
Yeah,
all right. We'll have comments from the live stream coming up next. But first, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. And especially right now where a lot of listings are on the market, far more than there were 6 months ago or a year ago, you need to make sure your listing stands out. That's how you get more feet in the door. That's how you get more offers on the table. That's how you make the most possible money off your home when you go to sell it, which is what we all want, let's be honest. And Wes can help you with all of that. Their marketing material is exceptional. The way they put their listings together, the combination of immersive video and photographs is wonderful. So that'll definitely make your listing stand out. But then Wes can come in and take the most stressful part of selling your home off your shoulders. And that is making any sort of cosmetic upgrades to be able to get more money on the back end. It's just reality for a lot of us. We live in our homes. We see the little things here and there and we tell ourselves, I can live with it. But a new somebody who's buying your home might not be willing to live with it. And that could be a make or break thing. So Wes can come in. He can manage those projects. He's only going to recommend the things that'll get you more money on the back end. And then you don't even have to pay for those projects until closing. So it takes the financial stress off of you as well. So sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. Thanks for sticking with us through our tech issues today. I don't know if we've ever stopped a live show and then just restarted it entirely. That might be a first for Undivided.
Well, successfully restarted.
Successfully restarted. Of course, we missed 2 days, and then the internet gods are like, screw you, lady. Mm-hmm. Hate you. So we appreciate you guys tuning back in. Let's see. I got some good super chats today for my showdown with Bob Ferguson. Bill Biz, Brandy, how dare you suggest that sanctuary laws aren't making the appropriate balance for Washington values? They make perfect sense to Ferguson as long as you disregard the whole crime thing. Yeah. And look, do U.S. citizens commit heinous crimes? Yes. Yes, they do. But I'll be damned if we will allow someone to come into our country illegally and commit a heinous crime and then get to still stay here. There's an extra level to that. If we could get every person who killed a cop out of our country, I would love to do that. Unfortunately, there's a thing called the Constitution and we can't send the Americans away. Julie Bailey, thank you for asking Ferguson tough questions and proving that Ferguson and our state leaders have zero interest in protecting the legal citizens of Washington State. Zero interest. Moon goddess. Message from Bolt Up to Brandy. Thanks for standing up to Fergie for us. We appreciate you. Oh, did he sent you a super chat to send me? Thank you. Some people believe they need attention and acceptance by the leftist mob more than common sense. Maybe that's what Bob Ferguson wants. Attention and acceptance from the leftist mob. Papa Woody, I hate that you asked and he didn't answer. I do too. I was stunned. I was like, when did you answer it? Like he's saying right to my face, I've already answered that. And I was like, what, when? And then moved on. Anybody else? No, crazy.
I don't like this.
Oh, you could just, he hate. And look, I don't blame him for not liking me. I wouldn't like me either. If I was a politician and someone was as harsh on me as I am on him, I wouldn't like him either. But, you know, he answered. He took a question from me. Good for him. Lynn, he never answered a question and says sanctuary was passed bipartisan. What is his definition of bipartisan? Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah. Because I should have talked about it on the show today. So we're like looking in. This was not a bipartisan bill, the Keeping Washington Working Act. Mm-hmm. It was almost entirely along party lines. And during the process, there were a couple of Republicans, like maybe two or something, who voted in favor of it. And then I think on the final votes, it was along party lines. Maybe in the House, it was like one or two, but it was hardly any Republicans. But he uses that and he uses those Republicans to prop up a political talking point years later. I can guarantee you those Republicans do not want to be used as part of your political talking point. No. Ridiculous. On what's happening in the Arlington School District, Ramona says, err on the side of safety. When did no tolerance of guns and drugs go away? You get expelled, end of story. They have to find an alternative education path.
Sorry. Do you remember when the kid got expelled for the sandwich eaten into the shape of a gun? He got expelled. Could never come back.
What school is that?
That wasn't here.
It wasn't here. Okay.
But regardless, like, remember when that was a thing?
I remember that story.
People were getting, our kids were getting expelled, could never come back to school because they, you know, chewed their sandwiches into the shape of guns. But this kid actually brings a gun with extra magazine and he gets to come back.
Round in the chamber, safety off. Yeah. Like ready to fire ready at a moment's notice. Crazy. Mm-hmm. And just loose in his backpack.
Mm-hmm. Wild.
Bookworm says, even ignoring all other factors, is the school district not risking a huge level of legal liability in case another incident with his kid? Exactly. At the very base level. Lil Miss J, gosh, when I was in school, students like that would be removed permanently. Why is this happening this way? This reduces the accountability for those students acting this way. Yeah, I agree. On the Rainbow Resource Hub, started by the state of Washington, Brianne asks, WTF is 2S? Brianne, you really ought to, you know, appreciate differences more. 2S is two-spirit. It's what the Native Americans, it's the trans version for Native Americans. They call themselves two-spirit. So that's what the 2S stands for. Matthew Cook, not affirming your kid's gender is child abuse. Being sarcastic, of course. But taking fentanyl and keeping it accessible to your kids in the house, not child abuse. Yeah, weird standards our state has. On the illegal alien semi-driver who killed three in Florida, had a WA license, Shasho Windfeather, as a CDL holder, the entire thing with this guy really pissed me off. Oh, 100%. Walking with the savior, pilots don't get to fly commercial planes all over America without federal approval. CDL should be the same. Right, can you imagine like Washington State just issues people their own pilot's licenses for commercial travel, literally goes, then they get to fly everywhere else. It doesn't make any sense.
You have to fly in circles in the state.
It doesn't make any sense.
No.
One more super chat from Matthew Cook. Thank you. Brand is a bulldog. Celebrate your achievement with some Kirkland brand rosé. You know I love my Kirkland brand rosé, the sparkly kind. Says Bob is the cowardly governor. Have to agree. And he's very, very, well, I've interviewed Bob many times before when I was in TV and he was the attorney general. So obviously I've met him many times. But he is, it just reminded me, I haven't seen him in person since he's been governor. And I certainly haven't seen him in person in probably 3 or 4 years. He's like a wet noodle. He's like a wet noodle. Not very intimidating. So when he's up there like talking a big game and a big talk against the Trump administration, I'm just like, you know, you're not very threatening, you know? Anyway, all right, shall we move on to our...
Yes, what? Although, so somebody corrected me. Well, there was a sandwich into a gun and a Pop-Tart into a gun.
Oh, it was a Pop-Tart.
Both of those kids were, like, elementary school suspended for extended periods of time. And, I mean, they went to court. But then there was a kid in Tennessee that got expelled for finger guns.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
See?
Like, those are all younger than high school.
And though. Those, I think, are dumb. That's stupid.
It's all stupid.
That's stupid. This is a real loaded gun.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
That's
it's
wild.
And in Arlington. Arlington.
You get to come back to school.
You're more sane than this, Arlington.
Wow. Anyway.
And look, I'll just say it. I'm going to say it. Do I say it? Do I say it?
I don't know what you're going to say.
I think this has to do with race.
Oh.
I am not using the student's name. But based on the name, I don't believe the student is white. That's just based on the name. I could be wrong. Maybe they have a non...
Based on the last name.
Based on the last name alone, I just am making an assumption that the student is not white. And I do think that's relevant because we, you know, they always talk about these disproportionate income outcomes for students of color, and that's why they reduced academic standards. It's why they reduced punishments and stuff because the disproportionate impact on students of color. I do wonder if he is indeed, as I suspect, not white, if that's factoring into the scenario. Just something to leave you here at the end of the show.
Interesting.
Something to noodle on.
All right.
Okay.
There you go.
With that, I've got a great closing sanity check for you. I saw it this weekend. I was just like, that's the best thing I've ever seen. Let's get to it. All right. Rapper Big Sean was performing... It's like 11 days ago. The video was just surfacing at the White River Amphitheater. And he had apparently just before then been hanging out in Seattle and saw what everyone apparently except politicians see, out of control drug use.
Seattle, you know, we was in Seattle all day yesterday and we went and got some Thai food. I fuck with the Thai food. We went to our little spot, and I was like, you know, I want to walk back to the hotel, and shit. It was a couple miles. And we walked back, and I haven't seen this. I went to high school in Detroit in like a kind of crazy neighborhood. I haven't seen this since high school. We saw a young lady doing crack. I'm like, oh, I know it sounds crazy, like, with kids around. And she whipped the pipe out and was doing crack. And there were cops around, and I was like, damn, Seattle. I didn't know Seattle was like that. That shit is... Y'all kind of f***ed up here, but I love the city so much, I swear. Y'all make some noise for yourselves.
So Big Sean says he hasn't seen something this crazy since he was growing up in Detroit. Says, and he does say that he had Thai food, and it was amazing. Our Thai food is pretty amazing in Seattle. Sees somebody doing crack around kids and cops, and he's like, shocked by it. Somebody who grew up in Detroit. That's how bad things are. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's Take Two edition of Undivided. We appreciate all of you. We have a busy, couple weeks coming up. So we'll be back on the live show Monday. We have an edition of Sundays with Subscribers on Sunday. We'll be here next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then we're going on a little vacation. But we have such good content for you while we're gone. We're doing another edition of Truth Tellers. We taped all the interviews this week. They're so good. So we're looking forward to it. We'll, of course, give you plenty of notice about what's going to be happening while we're on vacation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Thanks for letting me ditch you for a couple days this week. Did miss you. That's it. So subscribers, I'll see you on the Sunday show. We're going to be talking about how Washington State and progressive policies are hurting businesses. And then the rest of you, I'll see you back here on the live show Monday at noon, Pacific time.